Welcome to the panel, RNZ National. Today, universities and politics will face a $100,000 fine if they are found to be responsible for the serious harm or death of students in their care. How far should we go in the pastoral care of young adults? An international relations specialist says that the government of New Zealand is behaving irresponsibly by not bringing New Zealand jihadist Mark Taylor home. And a surge in demand by customers for plant-based proteins. The end of meat is nigh, or are those lamb shanks just too good? And 1 year ago today, lime scooters started appearing on the Auckland streets before hitting other cities. So with that thought, our question of the day is this. Lime scooters a year on, what have you been your experiences, or e-scooters in general? Someone says, as a cyclist and fast walker, I've not seen the need to use any scooters. My options are faster and safer. No helmet provided means I'd never ride on one. I'm sure they have the uses, but tiny wheels and poor brakes are a joke compared to cycling. And another here, as a slightly disabled pensioner, I have given up going downtown since those damn scooters arrived. I approve in theory, but not so long as they're ridden on footpaths without helmets. So your thoughts, please text us 2101 or email the panel at rnz.co.nz. With me today, we have writer and commentator Verity Johnson and Peter Fu, management consultant and former New Zealand diplomat. First up, though, in the latest polls, National would be able to form a government along with ACT. The Nats have climbed to 47% in the latest One News Colmar Brunton. That's up 2 percentage points to its highest level of support since being in opposition. Labour is down at 40%, down 3 points. Greens at 7% and New Zealand First at 4%, below the 5% threshold, although their numbers traditionally lift around election time. Yesterday's poll came a day after the News Hub Reed research poll, which showed Labour support slumped to 41.6%, down 9.2%. National up 6.5% to 43.9%. Now, last election night, Labour received 36.9% of the total vote. National got 44%. So, Peter, you first. The second poll sure to ring alarm bells within Labour, showing that National can indeed form a government. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, it's polling, and the only poll that counts is on election day, isn't it? So were you out? It's typical of pollsters to come out with you know, numbers you were out. I think there's probably three things of concern for the government. The one is the percentages around the confidence of people in the economy. I think one poll had it at 41%. The economy is important because it hits the households. That's your income. That's, you know, what you spend. Is the second is I think some of the lack of clarity around the so-called year of delivery hasn't occurred. They're chasing their tail. It's nearly the end of the year and the year of delivery hasn't occurred. And the third narrative is that out of the polls has been that she's used up a lot of goodwill, the Prime Minister, that is, on some of the distractions. And sorry to say this, but, you know, the sexual allegations within the party was politically a distraction, but a big issue for her and the narrative around her party, where if you can't look after the most vulnerable within your party, how can you look after the most vulnerable within society? So that's a narrative that I think that has run, and the polls probably show that.
All right, interesting. Verity Johnson, your thoughts?
I have to confess to being inherently cynical about all polls, because those polls are constant and ever-changing and none of them seem to make any difference.
Mind
except
you,
on election night.
Yeah, that's true, yes, but you got the two here back-to-back.
Yep, I agree, but like, I just kind of feel like politics is a lot of a small minority of people who vote and actually talk about these polls on a daily basis and care about them on a daily basis. And then there's everybody else who really doesn't care. Like, and I feel like these are one of those conversations which journalists care about and no one else does. So I'm a little bit like, okay, well, I'll ask me a week out how I'm feeling about it.
Okay.
Yeah. Although I have to say, just coming on from what you were saying, yeah, is that I agree in some ways. I think that there's definitely been a little bit of just into Stardust as one off, in that people expected more to be delivered this year. But at the same time, there actually has been really phenomenal things delivered. And I think when it comes to the really big things like the Christchurch attacks, yeah, and when it comes to like the wellbeing budget, there actually has been a lot of delivery and people understand and recognise that. So I think that in my circles, people still think she's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think the other interesting thing is, you know, around 18 to 20% of people are undecided. And both polls showed that. I mean, that's a high percentage. So what you'll have now is both parties now, interesting, as they say, go to the centre. And I don't think there's room. And also, you know, I don't think the voters, particularly on the Green side, would move away from some of the issues in what they would call the sort of left-hand spectrum and go to the centre. So it's going to be an interesting one. I think New Zealand First voters, in terms of under 5%, I think they'll move across the board, probably
right.
Probably because Winston tells them to, right? To be all, in all honesty, and all of all due respect to New Zealand First supporters, but 4%, they'll probably climb over that, leading up to the election. So where they move and their followers move will be an interesting one.
That will be an interesting one to watch, won't it? I mean, how much of it, Peter, do you think also is down to the messy nature of coalition politics? As a newsroom piece suggests, any semblance of discipline can be undercut by the differing needs of coalition members to have their voice, to exert their authority. And to give an example, take that photo of Shane Jones on holiday shooting what appears to be an AR-15, similar to the type of gun banned in New Zealand. What it looks to say is, there's one standard for New Zealand First, another for the rest of the coalition. Is that a hard thing to manage? And voters might see that and go, gosh.
Yeah, there was a poll done, a few weeks back, around the CEOs, business CEOs and employers. The word that they used was clarity, right? So discipline is one word, but the lack of clarity. You can communicate your policy and communicate your narrative and communicate your vision and where you want to go. But at the same time, you've got to communicate all the little steps to get to that vision, right? And that's the thing that under a coalition government, they've found difficult to communicate every activity and every action that then leads to the vision that she has created for herself and also that the populace has put her in to create for this country. So clarity of communication and clarity of issue is the challenge with coalition governments, particularly when there's three in the bed.
Oh, no, I agree with what you're saying about clarity and business leaders saying that they want to see more direction and they want to see sort of like the step-by-step process on how they've achieved. But I also think that this is something which I've always got when I talk to people, largely through my dad, who's probably the most corporate person I know, yeah, and all of his friends, is that I find that people in the business community and the more corporate leaders tend to be inherently resistant towards Jacinda Ardern in principle anyway, and then they just start bringing up all these things like, oh, we need to see more clarity. And then when you provide really clear instances of when she has been really clear, they're like, well, I need to see more than that. And then they say things like, oh, well, I just don't think that, she's got enough experience. And then when you point out things that she's done really well, they're still like, oh, well, that's just not enough experience. So I think there's a little bit of ingrained, they don't want to take her seriously anyway. Yeah. So I think they kind of like always look for things to be like, well, I don't take her seriously because of this and this and this and this and this, when actually they're ignoring the fact that in terms of New Zealand's world reputation, in terms of establishing a new form of leadership, in terms of looking at your GDP as a form of wellness measure as opposed to a constant growth, New Zealand's actually made incredible strides under Labour. And yet you always get this backlog of people who are like, oh, well, I just don't like her. She just doesn't have enough experience, or she's just not... Yeah. I just think there's right. inherent cynicism.
Now, I think in that same poll, though, the good CEOs shine through in that they saw the environment, they saw sustainability as critical. The same poll will tell you that, your future leaders or your current CEOs who are of a different generation from, say, your 60s, they see where their customer base and where their clients are going. And so sustainability and environment was a massive issue in that same poll for business leaders. So it's ever changing. It's part of our progressive society, but again, it's all about that communication and ensuring that everybody understands each other and what we're trying to achieve here.
It's going to be an interesting election, isn't it? Whether it's going to be a gut buster of an election or a shocker, it's going to be fascinating, isn't it, to see what's going to happen?
Oh yeah, I still think our election cycle is too.
It's too short. It's way too short.
Do you think?
Yeah, it's too short. It's ridiculous. It always has been. Always will be if we continue with 3 years. The referendums, as part of the next election, will be an interesting one as well, because we've got the. What is it? Haven't we got a couple? I think we've got one on marijuana
and cannabis. Yeah.
So it's the referendums will be interesting at the next election as well.
All right. Got to give a bit of a shout out, actually. Wallace, I'm a 54-year-old electrical contractor on one of the most beautiful sites in Queenstown and have finally got all the tradies listening to you and not the drum-beating computer music they live on. Say hi to the tradies on the Tears construction site and, of course, to my lovely wife listening to while she tends to our garden. So... A big hello to all the traders in Queenstown listening to this right now by compulsion.
Kia ora, tradies. Hello.
Kia ora. Go out and get a cardi.
Go out. Yeah, that's right. You watch it. Yeah, exactly. Now, it's 16 past four. You're on the panel, RNZ National. Universities and politics will face a $100,000 fine if they are found to be responsible for the serious harm or death of students in their care from next January. There will be two law changes in response to the death of 19-year-old Mason Pendris, whose body lay undiscovered in his hostel room at the University of Canterbury for at least a month. Pendris was found only after his friend climbed up onto the roof to look into his missing friend's room. At the moment, tertiary providers follow a voluntary code of conduct, but Education Minister Chris Hipkins said that that was not enough. To quote, halls and hostels charge a premium for their accommodation, and parents have every right to expect a high level of care for their sons and daughters. Now, a new mandatory code will come into effect in January 2021. So the questions are, I guess, what sort of duty of care should there be? Do uni hostels owe it to parents to look after their sons and daughters? Do they already? And at what stage do young adults take responsibility for themselves? Verity, what do you think about this? 100 grand penalty to be paid by the university, even if they contract out their accommodation to a third party provider. What do you think of it?
I think it's great. I think there should be far more emphasis on making sure that pastoral care is actually provided in these circumstances. Like, I mean, so when I was at university, I know that...
Where did you go?
I went to Melbourne. So I didn't actually go to university in New Zealand, but Australia and New Zealand are quite similar in the way they had the setups. And I was at a hostel.
Were you?
Yeah. And obviously paying more for that pastoral care and support system. It was, quite frankly, appalling. And the way in which they handled very serious issues around, like for me personally, like I, you know, I got this is I haven't told the story to anyone ever, but I had a bit of a bad breakup, and the guy stalked me for a long time. And the way that the college responded was absolutely appalling. There was no support. He could access the college all times. He managed to find a key. You know, they got in, and there was no form of accountability at all. And my safety was very much like, we don't care. So I think that there's an attitude of negligence that goes on, and they get away with it because they're like, well, you're adults now. You should look after yourself. And it's like, well, yes, we are becoming adults, but this is often the first year that we've left home. And there are a lot of big things that we're dealing with, including people who have never, you know, like alcohol, who never had drank before, are suddenly drinking. There's many factors that can go wrong. And you are paying to be there to have a pastoral support system. Otherwise, you would just be living at home or you'd go out flatting. So if you've got to pay extra to stay in a uni hostel, man.
What an experience. How many years were you at the hospital for? 1 year or?
2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
Peter?
Yeah, I mean, regulation will help, but by the end of the day, it's about implementation of those policies, pastoral care policies, health and safety. And
what does it mean? What does pastoral care mean? That's what I want to know.
And you know, and it's different for a postgrad student, you know, who's probably in their mid-20s to an 17-18-year-old.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a wide range in terms of what is it, the client or the individual that you need to, that you need to look after. So the implementation of it is far more important. I would have thought that the government would have waited for Judge Toogood's review. No doubt he, it's probably finishing up. No doubt he'll have some recommendations. And I would have thought that the officials and the minister would have waited for that review because they could have used it as a baseline to then develop their policy. Basically, what you're doing is you're going off half-cocked in a way by saying, which is a political thing that he's doing, we'll fix it and we're going to regulate it, when actually there's probably a couple of things that they probably just need to pause on and then make the right call.
Before we go to our guest on this, because we've got the national president of the NZUSA, look, as a person too who spent his first year in a very large university hostel, this is in Dunedin, in fact I think it was the biggest hostel on campus or around campus, hundreds of students. One of the reasons I entered a hostel and not flatting was that it was a transition to living alone. Okay, so you did have your meals provided. You had your room cleaned once a week. There was a duty manager. You had to be in by a certain time. There was a counsellor. But beyond the idea was preparing you to be able to live alone. This was adulthood. So what might change in all that mix, I wonder? Do you see what I'm saying? That part of being in a hospital, part of going to a place like this is actually learning to be an adult.
Yeah, it is about learning to be an adult, but there's also about providing a minimum standard of care that you are paying for, right? I mean, if you are having experiences, we don't know what happened, obviously, in this case, but I can tell, for instance, if you look at the statistics around sexual assault on campus, sexual assault in hostels, there are massive problems that are happening here which are going unaddressed. So you should provide a minimum level of care in the same way we should be providing a minimum level of care in society as general for these instances.
Yeah, and that minimal level includes attention.
Yeah, attention. People caring.
People, it's simple attention that in adulthood when they will get to understand as they will be employed where care and duty of care and that attentiveness is important in the workplace in your as you start families etc. The attention should be provided to them and whilst they're in the care of these providers.
Okay, with us we have Caitlin Barlow Groom, who is the acting national president of the NZUSA. Kia ora, Caitlin.
Hey, how are you?
Okay, so you'd have heard what Verity and Peter have said on this. What are your thoughts on an initiative like this, a $100,000 penalty?
I think it's really good. I think what we've seen from the government is taking students' safety very seriously, and partial care is needed. And like people have said before, a minimum standard is required because it varies so differently from institutions, and what we've seen in Christchurch was a lack of care.
I think this is what Universities NZ Chris Whelan says. We have one very public and very tragic example, and we are all waiting to see the review around that. But actually, as a system, we generally do very well by our students. What do you make of that? Is that the case, do you think?
I think I've heard a range of stories, and it goes beyond just universities. Polytechs too have tertiary accommodation. So we do need to, as a tertiary sector, increase the standard here. And I was in a hall in Otago as well, and I had a really great experience, but it doesn't mean everyone did.
So, yeah, I mean, is there a balance? We want young adults to be able to look out for themselves and after themselves too, and that's what part of being at university is about.
Oh, 100%, but I think it depends on why people go to university and to study. I think that's something we need to take into consideration when developing this permanent code of practice. But, when I went, I was 18 and I was wanting to, live my best life, as I say, and I didn't have to clean up after myself. The cleaner came in and did all that stuff for me. So I think it depends on why people go into a hall.
Mm. So what, it's a shocking circumstance, and of course in Dunedin we had the tragic death of 19-year-old Sophia Cristani at a Dunedin house party. Can the duty of care by university, by politics and associated establishments be better overall?
Oh, 100%. Not just in accommodation, but as a whole, it'd be good to see an increased level of partial care.
Caitlin, thank you very much for your time. Caitlin Barlow-Groom, acting national president of the NZUSA. And one final note on this, you would really, I think I've said this before, Peter, I can always recall that moment when Mum and Dad put me on the bus to go to university, and then they held hands and looked as I drove away on the bus, and they would have been thinking, oh my goodness. Hope he's safe.
Yeah,
we wouldn't hear from him for a couple of weeks or so. I just hope he's safe. And you really think about those parents, don't you? Thinking they would want the best care for their daughter or son.
Agree. Mm. Agree.
It's 4:25. I just want to spend a little bit of time on this. Interesting. A young, successful Australian CEO has taken aim at his fellow millennials, blaming them for a retail downturn and calling them lazy. John Winning is the fourth generation boss of whiteware retailer Winning Group, and he says he's gobsmacked by the unrealistic expectations and lack of work ethic, Verity, by millennials in general. He says they're more interested in get-rich-quick schemes than hard work and are expecting a promotion and pay rise after being trained to do their job. He also goes as far to blame the struggles facing the retail sector on them, saying they're living beyond their means, trying to live lifestyles they can't afford because of what... Hey, Verity, how's your get-rich scheme going?
Oh, yeah,
how's
totally.
Good?
Yeah, it's great. I've got that white jag. I'm the person buying into multi-level marketing schemes and selling you isogenics and stuff. Yeah, that's me. Absolutely. Oh, God, there's so many things wrong with it. Can I just point out...
Well, go start.
I just like, the first thing I like to say is, if he's a fourth generation CEO, does that mean that he inherited it from his family? So the title got passed down. So basically, so someone walked into a family job and is now complaining that we're not working hard enough.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Good place to start.
Yeah, there's often a bit of that, when you look behind the scenes.
Yeah, I know.
How did they start? Not with $10.
No. It's like Donald Trump, self-made man. How did you start? Oh, massive inheritance from your father. Oh, okay, right. Not that self-made. I just think that this is such a classic
mashup of stereotypes.
I know. Okay, right. So,
because you've just told me, you said at the in the introduction, you noticed the, and it was just anecdotal, of course it is, but you noticed the extraordinary difference between the 18-year-old and the 25-year-old, of which you're 25, the millennial.
Yes.
And so you'll see a noticeable difference in attitude. There's this. What is it? Aspiration, hunger to learn, extreme awareness about climate change. So attitudes can differ.
Yes.
Over generations.
They absolutely can differ between generations. But the one that he's characterising us as inaccurate.
I'm not pointing any fingers.
No,
I mean,
it's all good.
Generation X, wasn't called the slacker generation for nothing.
every generation, complains about the one coming. But I'm a director of an organisation, that's got 2,100 people across the globe, right?
Yeah.
So he's seen it from a Western lens, right? Mm. That's a millennial from a Western lens. I've met millennials from Africa, India, Bangladesh, who at 5 years old have to walk 2 kilometres, to go and get water.
Yeah.
And then by 15, they're feeding their family of six because, right? So
mic drop.
Yeah, mic drop.
Yeah.
So it's a very much, so Mr.
Good
Winning
point.
Comes from a very privileged background. Sitting on a very privileged platform and dictating a viewpoint which is from a Western lens. So it's a one-third of the world viewpoint, which isn't accurate, especially when he says all these millennials.
It's also from a position of affluence, which really annoys me, because even like in New Zealand, like you're saying, I know girls of 18 who are working and are bringing in the wages and are keeping their family going, supporting younger sisters, supporting parents. Like, I know so many millennials and Gen Zers who are the financial backbone of their family, doing it at school, going to school and still working and supporting their like younger sisters. So don't sit there and be like, oh, you're lazy, Mr. I inherited something from my grandfather.
But also the other issue is, as a CEO, he's got bigger issues to think about.
I know. Particularly
when it's in manufacturing. So, I mean, he says it himself, it's a competitive market. We should think about the competitive advantage that he has, being four generations of owning an appliance manufacturing, entity with taxes that are biased, against, foreign manufacturers. So he's got an advantage.
He's got bigger fish to fry.
He's got bigger fish to fry and a bigger market to think about, and also his employees to think about, than to think about a small cohort of employees. And just to add, if he is hiring millennials, then a CEO should never be at the ground level. He should hire a good HR manager and deal with it whilst he deals with the CEO level issues.
We have all the answers. Never thought I'd get these sort of hot rod off answers today, but wow. But just look, on a final note on this, really, because you do see this quite a bit in the papers, don't you?
Yep.
But does it fly in the face of what we've just seen, both with that massive march a week or so back, younger, not all young people, but masses of younger people took to the streets and droves, and the number of youth that we're starting to get actively involved in local politics? Just yesterday we had on the show 19-year-old new Nelson councillor, Rohan O'Neill Stevens.
Yeah, and this is what I mean, is that I don't think this generation are lazy. I don't think they don't care. There is a huge, like you said, movement among them. They're politically engaged. They want change. I think a little bit of where this stereotype comes from is that young people are more emotionally articulate about calling out when something is wrong. So, like, if you expect us to do something which we would consider inefficient or misplaced or, we just don't agree with it, we will call you out on it. And if that challenge is interpreted as us not wanting to do it because we're lazy, that's where it could come from a lot of the time.
Mm. Good point.
Right, today on the panel we have writer and commentator Verity Johnson, also Peter Fiu, management consultant and former New Zealand diplomat. Now, to come after the headlines is our question of the day. Every day across the show, every day we have this thing called the question of the day, and today it's been a big one. The question being Lime scooters, 1 year on, or e-scooters, what have been your experiences? Text us 2101, email the panel at rnz.co.nz.